Hello and welcome to Not Another Teacher Podcast with me, Mar Malone.
And me, Poppy Gibson.
We're here to help you protect your mental and physical health so that you can thrive both in and out of the classroom. Not bad. Two times done.
Yeah, smashing it. We're crushing it.
See, and today I thought it'd be a good episode to just really delve into kind of past and stuff like that and find out your journey, find out about, you know, why you're into teaching, why you got out of it, any advice you've got for anyone along the way. And then obviously next week we can do it vice versa. But I think it'll be really good. And
that's
What got you into teaching, and obviously what did you teach?
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning then. What got me into teaching? It was always just a natural decision for me. It didn't feel like there were lots of other options that grabbed me. And do you know why? Because do you know what I love about teaching? I really love humans. That sounds really silly, but I love humans. I love humans. I love people. I love connecting with people. That's why I love social media. I love the people you meet. And I think I saw education as a way of just getting to meet so many people. And what I loved about education is this idea that as the teacher, you're constantly going to be looking at things from other people's perspectives, but also, you know, trying to be part of their journey, trying to learn about them, learn about the world in a different way. So I kind of love this idea that if I went into being a teacher, I would continue being a learner as well.
Yeah.
For me, like, learning's always been super empowering. Like, I love learning. And for me, that's always been my me time, like studying or reading. I guess it came from a love of reading. That escapism of knowledge and learning. And so I guess I was quite lucky, I think, because you know when you have those career fairs, Martin, and like everyone's like, what do I do? What do I do? I was like, oh, I want to be a teacher. So for me, it was quite easy. The only other thing that ever came up on my radar was because I love languages, and I did my A-levels were Spanish, French, and I did Italian at GCSE, and I did German as an evening course just for fun. I loved languages. Again, part of that human element. I just find it fascinating. I did once dally with being like some kind of translator or something like that, but it seemed like too much paperwork, to be honest. And kind of lacked the human element, because I think it would have been immersed in the language, not in the people. So I was like, right, no, I do want to be a teacher. I looked for the best teacher training places. And at the time, Edgehill Uni was number one. So that was right up north, actually, in Ormskirk, like your neck of the woods up north. So I was born in Wales, went to school in Hereford. And then I was like, I'm just going to take a risk. So I signed up for uni at Edgehill. I didn't even go see the uni, actually, before I went. Which is crazy. I would advise people should do that. And I did go see some other unis that were more closer, but I just felt like the training course I wanted was this 3-year primary education degree. And what I loved, it had a specialism in child psychology. So that kind of like really like kind of ticked my boxes. So I signed up for that. And I just remember the day my mum and dad drove me up, like, I don't know, 5 hours from the south to the north. And I got there and I was like, whoa, what am I doing? And yeah, did a 3-year course. During that time, I'll be honest, everyone, okay, it wasn't always plain sailing. I think for me, I didn't always find that the tutors respected me or engaged with me or got to know me. And that's like a massive red flag for me. That can totally put my barriers up. So I think I was that kind of student who disengages, or not disruptive. I don't say disruptive, but I didn't always find uni itself enjoyable. But as soon as I went on placement, as soon as I went into a primary school on my placements, I was just in love. Like, I loved everything about it. I loved being at the front. I loved walking around the room. I loved kneeling down and working with the children. I loved getting to know the children. I loved everything about it. And so I kind of knew, because teaching is the one where we do have these really clear standards for training, I knew I'm going to have to knuckle down, do my degree work, because once I was out in the school, I was just in love. And I knew I've got to stick with this because I'll need to have my qualification to actually be a teacher. So it was really the love of being with the children and that love of learning that that kept me at it, because so many times, and between us, I did get a red card at uni once. That's for another day or never. And there were times I thought, I'm just really bored by the assignments, by the way that it was being delivered. But again, when I was on placement, I loved it. I felt so curious and creative, and I loved being with the children and getting to know them. And so anyway, cut a long story short, became a teacher, worked in and around London for 11 years and loads of different roles. I would also encourage listeners, like, don't be afraid to change roles. And I was head of computing, head of PSHE. That's personal social health education. It changes all the time. And I had a C at the end once, didn't it? Citizenship. And that's gone. Yeah. Loads of different roles. And yeah, for me, looking back now, obviously I don't do that. I'm not in a primary school now, but I loved it. There were so many moments that I loved. And what was really cool, Martin, here's like the kind of the best bit. I told you I loved languages.
Yeah.
I have managed, because I was head of languages in the school, I got to create language frameworks. I created a whole Spanish curriculum at one school. I did La Caperucita Roja, which is Little Red Riding Hood. I wrote a script from scratch for Little Red Riding Hood. The children performed it to parents in Spanish. I took children to France on the residential. I made Spanish pen pals. I made pen pals with Guatemala. La Escuela de la Esperanza in Guatemala. My year sixes had Guatemalan pen pals. So I got to follow my passion within education. And that's, for any teachers listening, that's my main message. Don't lose sight of you. And that's why what I loved the most was, even though I was a teacher, I mean, no primary school teachers do everything, I still had those real moments of passion for languages as well. So yeah, that was kind of it. That's 11 years in a nutshell, Martin, really.
No, I like it. And I think that's the big one, isn't it? Like finding what you love. I think that's the thing. Because I think that was one thing I always liked about teaching. Like, even though you've got a boss, you are your own boss, aren't you? Like, you get to do these little projects. And depending on how big a form, like, you're in, like, mine was always one form. So basically, I was in charge of year five. Like, there was only me there.
Nice. Yeah, that's nice.
That's the thing. Like, you're your own boss. It comes with its downsides as well as its perks. But I think that's the big one, isn't it? You can lean into stuff and just go, do you know what? Like, I want to do more of this and, like, be flexible that way. So it's good that way. And like you say, 11 years in there, how many schools did you end up in?
Yeah, I always have to check myself. I think it was 5 or 6.
Yeah.
A lot, but I know that's very different to you. Just tell us. I know I'll ask you next week, but tell us, how many schools you're in?
Well, technically 2, but I don't even count the first one because I think I was there 3 weeks.
So. Wow.
Did a lot. I think it comes from them different things, doesn't it? And, you know, obviously, I think there is pluses and minuses to both. I bet you, like, going to 5 different schools, I bet you got to see so much different practice.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you probably found it easier to go with the ladder because you're going into certain places. You know, they will be looking for you, won't they? Like, you know, they'll go, oh, she's got this, so we could put this on with her. That side of it's good. But I think the other side of it, when you're in one place for a long time, I think you get a lot more free rein.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are just more trusted. Not that you weren't trusted in the classroom, but like, after 5 years in the same school of doing the same subjects, like, no one even bothered to check what I was doing. Like,
well, you know, like, the back, like, of your hand, I guess. Like, you must have known it inside out.
That's it. And funny enough, the school I was in was actually really strange in that way. So I was there 9 years.
Wow.
And I was I was either the second newest or the third newest. I'd say, yeah, third newest I was out of everyone there.
Wow, like, that's crazy. Obviously, a really happy school. And I think, do you know what, that says a lot about the school.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, it's a mix of the school and the person. Because honestly, Martin, when you told me, I know when we first met, you said you're in the same school for 9 years. It kind of gave me the ick. Because, like, I just instantly feel like kind of suffocated by that. And I hear what you're saying, doing the same thing 5 years in a row. you probably knew exactly what page number, what video clip on YouTube. Like for me, I'll be like, oh my gosh, I cannot handle teaching The Great Fire of London again.
Oh, it was good when you could just go in, and out and done.
Yeah, I think it depends. Yeah, that's really interesting. We clearly have quite different teaching personalities, and it'd be interesting of listeners who listening has been in one role for a long time or who's moved around. And I think, yeah, both are brilliant.
I think there's definitely pluses and minuses for both.
Yeah.
I think it's so much easier to jump up the ladder when you're jumping around like you did, because you're going into places and there will be them gaps. Where like me, like I was, say this second/third, like newest member, even after 9 years. So
yeah.
Really there was still like six people ahead of me in the pecking order.
Yeah.
They were the ones that were in there, and like it, there wasn't really a pecking order after the head and deputy, but like, you know, if someone was looking to progress, it'd be the people who've been there the longest.
Yeah. And even because they've got their reputation. I hear that. And do you know what? I do think you're right. There is something in staying in a school for a long time, but I think the hardest thing I didn't mention this bit, but when I was, so I did a master's and then I did a PhD. And when I was finishing my PhD, it was just quite a lot with, I was a mum as well at the time. So being a mum, being a full-time teacher and trying to do a PhD was a lot. So I found a school that was part-time. It was a PPA cover, kind of. It was like, I was only in the school 2 days a week, which was heaven for my PhD because I was working on that 3 days a week and then I was in school 2 days a week. But I must just say hats off to anyone listening who's a part-time teacher, because this was towards the end of that 11 years. It was actually the end of it. It was actually the very last role I had in a school, and I hated it because I had no reputation. Yeah. I've gone from having like 10 years, like feeling really proud of everything, to suddenly becoming someone who just came in 2 days a week. I did year one, 1 day a week. But then I did PPA in year two and year six. And I just had to sponge up whatever the teacher hadn't wanted to teach in the week.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. I've worked really hard to get to know the parents. That was my top tip. But I missed all the fun things at school. No one in the staff room spoke to me because they didn't really know who I was.
Yeah.
And I just felt like an outsider. And so in terms of my well-being, as a teacher, it felt horrible. I felt like I was nothing. But in terms of workload, like I had no reason to stay after 3:15. I would just be like, no one wants to talk to me. No one knows me. I'm only in 2 days a week. I've not got to plan anything for next week because they'd plan it for me as PPA. So I just skip out. So swings and roundabouts. But yeah, if anyone listening is a part-time teacher, I personally found that really difficult. But I did finish my PhD. So silver lining, Martin, is it did work in my advantage. But I did not enjoy that at all.
That's it. And I think like for me, being a PPA teacher would have been the dream job. That would have been my dream job. What?
No, but you think that. I don't think it's all it cracked up to be.
Oh, no, I would have loved it. I would have loved it. You just going in, doing those little bits, and then like no thing. But probably, and you're in probably the same thing. I know you got like a 2 day one there, but there were so many, I don't know how in the schools you started, but there were so many like full time PPA teachers when we started. And they all got cut. They all got cut just through budget cuts.
That's sad.
When they'd go, they'd be replaced. And now, like, a lot of the TAs do it, don't they?
It's awful.
I remember every now and again, a job will pop up because it's still all pinged through to my phone. And I'll see it and I'll go, oh, I wouldn't mind that.
Well, you can have it, Martin. Actually, funny you say though about them pinging up, because I get every day I get at least two emails like, hi Bobby, we're looking for a year two teacher in like, you know, Tower Hamlets. I'm like, no. But I did get one the other day. Hi Bobby, we're looking for a teacher in the Bahamas.
Really?
And I was just like, oh, and I sent it to my husband and I was like, you know how I said I'd never go back into the primary school? But no, I wouldn't. But it's fun. I think now I'm outside of it, it's fun to like dream. But I honestly don't think I would go back. Would you?
Yeah, I'm like 50-50 on it.
Really?
Because I did love being in it. And I think I had a good work-life balance towards the end when I was in it.
Yeah.
And now I've spent like 4 or 5 years helping other teachers with their work-life balances and learning more about everything with it.
Yeah.
I'd have an even better one when I went back.
Yeah,
But
true.
the thing which does really put me off is the paperwork. Like, I hate that idea of like, you teach for 4 hours and you work for 12.
Yeah.
Like, that to me, you do normally 4, maybe 5 lessons a day. Like, you should not have to do more hours in getting that ready and marking it and assessing it just because that's what they've done for hundreds of years.
Like, exactly.
Everyone knows that marking doesn't do any benefit now.
Exactly.
There's no point in it. You've got schools where they demand loads of planning, even though Ofsted are never going to ask for it. Like, there's all these things which always put me off. But I think, like, I'd have no problem going back into the classroom. But I'd definitely, like, pick and choose the school I wanted to be in and pick and choose the job. Like, I don't think I'd take anything above year three.
Okay. Because of the paperwork.
Yeah, because don't get me wrong, I do think there's a slide. I think it is equally as tough in reception as it is in year six.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a sliding scale of where that toughness comes.
Yeah, where your energy goes.
Yeah, and I think reception year one, year two, and kind of year three, there's not as much emphasis on like the after school work. It's still all definitely there, but like the marking you do is less because the kids are just physically doing less work. Where when you go up, like I was in year five, some kids would do like 5 pages.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I've got to read through this now.
Yeah. Times 30.
That's it. And that's the bit where I'd be like, oh, I'd rather go down that end.
But, so Martin, let's see, by about episode 10, I might be streaming from the Bahamas and you might be a primary school teacher again. We'll see where it goes.
Oh no. But I think that's an interesting thing to talk about, like actually leaving teaching. Like, what made you leave? And like, how did you get into like university and stuff like that now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. A lot of people ask me that, and I do get frequent DMs from teachers who see now that I'm running degrees in primary education. They're like, how did you make that jump? And so for anyone listening who's interested, firstly, do feel free to direct message me. I'm always happy to kind of reflect with you on your journey and think what your next steps would be. So, it was an interesting one because, you know, I told you I had that PPA job and I started feeling a bit disillusioned with teaching. Like, I wasn't getting that same feeling. And that had been happening actually not just in that job, but for kind of a couple of years where I'd kind of gone to schools that didn't fit me and I didn't fit them. And you know, I told you last time on episode one about I felt I couldn't leave before 6 p.m. And I've already kind of shown you I don't really like authority from what I've said today about my degree. So I was just finding myself feeling more boxed and boxed in, worrying about rating children, whether they were secure or not yet secure, and losing that human element of teaching that I think it's all about. And I was finding children becoming statistics and feeling powerless. And so to cut a long story short, again, I was finishing my PhD and I saw a job. I don't even know how this happened. Like, sometimes I think the universe puts stuff in like our Google searches because I saw a job and it said lecturer in primary education. And I was like, what is that? That sounds interesting. And so I looked at it and it was a role at University of Greenwich for a lecturer. And it said, you know, come and teach trainee teachers on a degree. And I was like, I'll never get picked for that.
Yeah.
But one other role that I'd started doing on Sundays, just because I was obviously now my wage was really small because I was a PPA teacher 2 days a week. I'd started working at Birkbeck College. I don't know if you know it, listeners, but it's the UK's evening college. So all the lectures are in the evening. they're all like 5 p.m. onwards. And I started working there on Sundays as an LSA, a learning support advisor, but for adults. So I'd go on Sundays. People could book one-to-ones with me. Like adults could book one-to-ones and they'd talk to me about their uni assignments. Some of them, and what was really cool actually about that, some of them were like in their 50s, 60s. I had one student who was 74 and they were coming into education after a lifetime of, you know, maybe raising a family or a career changer who finally didn't want to be in banking anymore or whatever it was. And so I was working with students from all different degrees, like helping them. They'd never used Microsoft Word before, for example. They'd never made a PowerPoint and now they've got to make a PowerPoint. And so I did a lot of work with people also supporting adults with needs, like maybe they'd just been diagnosed with dyslexia at the age of like 50. And so supporting them with how to use the software. And I just thought, wow, working with adults is really cool. And so when this lecturer job, maybe that's how it kind of got into my algorithms. When this job came up, lecturer in primary education, I was like, I'm kind of falling out of love with the classroom. I've now got a research background because I've done a master's and a PhD, well, I was just completing at that time. But also, I'm loving working with adults. And it's interesting what you said there, Martin, about different ages have different challenges. Like early years, I mean, wow, exhausting just because, wow, therefore. And then year six, exhausting, you know, and then the hormones. But adults, again, challenging because they're coming to you with all their baggage of a whole lifetime.
Yeah.
But incredibly empowering when, so this one student, her name was Rada, that was 74. Like I say, she hadn't used a laptop in her life. And so I was showing her, like, this is how you type, this is like how you do this, how you just search the internet. And it was so cool seeing her learn and be proud of herself. And like when she got her first assignments back, she was like, I passed. Like, you felt like you were part of this journey with them. And because they're older, all your focus goes on them and their learning. You know, I'm not having to wipe them down or worry about a friendship argument in the playground. All my focus is on them and their learning. And although, like I say, they come with the baggage of, you know, maybe they had a disagreement with their partner or something's happening in their family life. I just loved it. And so I went for this lecturing job and I had to do... I had to do a 10-minute presentation without slides or flashcards on research-informed teaching. And the question was, do you think research-informed teaching is important? And I remember having to Google, like, what even is that? Yeah, like, because we're coming from school where they didn't really talk about research so much.
Yeah.
And so I, like, Googled it. And I was like, oh, my gosh. So I prepared a 10-minute PowerPoint presentation. Sorry, I wasn't allowed a PowerPoint. Prepared a 10-minute thing. I had a couple of publications under my belt that I like showcased, but I really had no clue if I got it or not. They were saying, you know, what do you think you'd be like working with adults? So I had a bit of background with that. And then I remember I went home and I thought, I really have no clue. You know, you do an interview, sometimes you get a vibe, but I had no vibe. And I got home and I got a phone call from one of the professors and he just said, we'd love to offer you the job. And I just remember screaming at like this 60-year-old professor down the plane, like, oh my God. I'm so happy. And that was it, really. Went into teaching at uni, loved it. Very quickly became a module leader. So the subjects there are called modules. Very quickly then became a course leader, started running a degree. And then in COVID, I moved house and then got a job at a new uni. So the pattern continues. I'm still moving around. I was at the first uni for 4 years, which I loved. Gave me a lot of background in how to be a lecturer. And then I got senior lectureship and now I'm teaching at Anglia Ruskin. I've been there for 3 years. So I've been lecturing 7 years now.
Wow.
And I just love it. I just love my students. Actually, a really cool thing that I did this week, whenever you listen back, I hosted my first conference for my students and I had 8 of my students step up and present in a little mini conference, like safe space. It was so cool. I printed them all certificates that I laminated. So, you know, your primary school skills don't go away. So I was laminating to my heart's content and I made them little goodie bags. But honestly, sitting there watching them present and you can see they were wobbly and nervous. You could hear they were nervous, but they were stepping up and talking about what they're passionate about. I just felt so proud of them. And I just love it. Honestly, Martin, I can't think I will ever leave higher education. I just love it so much.
Oh, no, class. And I think it sounds like you found like, the right thing for you. It sounds like, as you say, teaching you were done with, like, but you still wanted to be in teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it. Like, what would you say is the big difference between, say, lecturing and teaching? Obviously, I know you've talked about it there, but like, what, like, day-to-day life, do you find it easier? Is there more paperwork? Is there less paperwork? Is it the fact that you're teaching less, or I don't know, are you teaching more? Like, how does it compare to teaching?
So, do you know what? It was really interesting that you mentioned the paperwork was your turn off, because the paperwork isn't, until marking comes in, then it's an issue, because their assignments, I've got dissertations coming in, they're 8,000 words each. Normal assignments are around 2,000, but that doesn't faze me. The planning is fine. You create content, you create PowerPoints that you share on the website, you know, that students access. You talk in the lecture theatre. That's all fine for me. But I would say, if someone asked me what's the hardest part of the job, it is because they're adults. So
yeah,
a lot of my time, whereas, you know, when school finishes, when primary school finishes 3:15, maybe you've got the odd parent, but generally the kids go home. You don't see them again till the next day at 8:45. The difference with the adults, they will email you, they'll contact you on Teams and say, have you got time for a 10-minute chat? Can we have a tutorial? People with anxiety, I had someone with a panic attack last week. Someone was made homeless recently. Issues with pregnancy, abortion, all those kind of things that as a primary school teacher, I had never had to think about. Yeah. And then, you know, you're now dealing with adults who can articulate these things, who have to deal with these things themselves. So, yeah, there's a lot. Most of my energy now, I would say, goes on more like mental health support or signposting. Like when students contact me, I would say every day I have at least one student tutorial or phone call, and it's never about the assignments.
Yeah. It's always about something else.
It's about mental health, struggling with anxiety. I'll get messages. Someone on a Monday morning, a student will message me and say, I'm too anxious, I can't leave my house.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, you know, what can you do? Kind of, again, how we sometimes feel in the primary school, like a bit powerless. Some of that here is, like, you know, what can I do? And what should I do as well? Because I know in episode one, we spoke about boundaries, didn't we? Like, what can I do? I can't coach you to get through this anxiety. That's not my role, although I want to.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I've got 250 students, you know. I can't give you each well-being advice and free coaching every week, although I wish I could.
That's it. And it's interesting with stuff like that, isn't it? Because, like, if someone's saying that they're, like, too anxious to come into your university lecture, but the job that they are trying to learn how to do is to stand in front of children and teach them. Like, there's that balance, isn't there, as well, of, like, well, you kind of have to learn how to do this, because the thing you want to do is so much tougher than that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? On, like, sometimes, Martin, I do give them tough love, and I will say, I think you really need to reassess if teaching is for you. Like, and I try to say it from a good place, but equally, if you can't come to a lecture theatre, which is a safe space with me that you know, how are you going to go into a classroom with 30 children who, you know, who need you? And equally, though, I do say that to my students, like, you know, every week we'll be in a seminar, and I'll say, who wants to come put their poster under the dot cam? You know, they've been, maybe I've given them a 10-minute task to make a poster about behavior management strategies or whatever, and I'll say, who wants to come up to the front? And, like, they'll all avoid eye contact, but I've got a room with, like, you know, 30 adults. So I'll say, guys, and you want to go in front of children in the classroom, you can't even come up, like, in this safe space to show it. And I'll normally then have one or two that will come up, but it's hard, isn't it? And then we kind of think, oh, can we blame COVID still, you know? And honestly, no, I don't think we can. And I do appreciate, you know, I think I'm lucky that I was, like, a fully formed adult at that point. Yeah. So different challenges to me. I wasn't, you know, a teenager trying to navigate that. But I do think there comes a point where you have to kind of take a bit of accountability. And also, yeah, really question, why are we getting into teaching? Is it because you think it's an easy option and you want the summer holidays? You know, or why? And I've had students as well, Martin, that when I've really asked them, why are you getting into teaching? They said, oh, because my mum's a teacher and my brother's a teacher. And I'm like, but what about you? Like, you're your own person, right?
See, I know just thinking back from when I was at uni, Like, I did the same. I did like a 4-year degree. And in the first year, so at the end of the first year, once everyone had graduated that first year, I know they sat down, like, they called in like 20 people out of the like 300 cohort and were like, listen, you can pick any other degree you want to do here and we will put you on it, but you can't be a teacher.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You were like, brutal.
Yeah, because apparently, like, they're just being like, no. Like, if we let you carry on, you will not pass. So,
wow. Pick a different one.
The academic side of it, you're fine. But we've already had feedback from schools that, like,
wow, that's tough.
And it was mad. Like, I remember there was a girl on our course who was so nervous, and I didn't really know her, but I knew she couldn't speak to men. So, like, when she went on placement, like, she was with a male teacher and they had to swap her. And it was just at a point where they were like, well, you, like, you know, you have to deal with that first before we let you continue.
Yeah. And it sounds like she probably has, you know, other issues going on that do need to be dealt with. Yeah.
You can kind of feel sorry for her in that sense, but it is that thing, isn't it? Of like teaching such a, I think I can't think of another degree where like you are graduating and then that is the exact job that you're going to do. Like if you do any other one, like engineering or maths or like there is quite a wide variety, isn't there? But teaching is like, you've got a qualification in teaching.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, whichever school you go to, although they're all different, or, you know, private or mainstream, you're still going to be someone who's going to need some kind of skill set when it comes to organization. Sorry, that's my cockerel in the background. organization. Yeah. And that accountability and the public speaking skills and that, you know, the way to engage people around you. I think we can't get away from that. And actually, one thing, I won't name or shame, of course, but I had one student, I won't even say anything about gender or anything, but I had one student who absolutely smashed their degree. They got a first class, incredible first class degree. I think they had the highest attendance of anyone, but they couldn't get onto a teacher training placement. They couldn't get onto a teacher training course. And I kept trying to give them support and advice, but ultimately they didn't have the right, I don't say personality, but I do think, you know, it's not always just about being academic, I guess is what I'm saying from that. Oh, and I felt really sorry for them because they obviously wanted to get into that profession. But there's a point where you've got to think, what do teachers need to be? What do they need to have? And maybe we don't all have it.
Oh, 100%. And that's what, do you know what, when I was at uni, that was one of my biggest gripes. Like, you do a teaching degree. Yeah, okay, I know you get pass or fail on your teaching skills and they get assessed. But your whole degree is about the essays that you write about the philosophies of teaching. And I always used to think, surely there must be a better way to just like get that degree rather than like writing an essay. And we always used to joke, they literally had 4 essays and every year they would just kind of change the titles a little bit.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, well, why? Like,
That doesn't prove you're a good teacher, does it? I agree with you actually. And I think, particularly Martin, we've seen obviously artificial intelligence come into our schools, and we obviously have an issue with this at university because we can see students are using AI to create parts of their assignment. We do have AI screeners, of course, so you will get caught if you try. But we have had some students already have interviews and penalties applied for trying to get away with using AI. And I, you know, we should use AI, but not there, not where you're being assessed. But here's why I think we need more presentations, and we do have some presentations at uni, but they're the thing the students hate most. And for me, I don't know about you, I love a presentation. What about you, Martin?
Yes, to be fair, give me anything. Like, I'm dyslexic, so give me anything where I don't have to write and I'll do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, that's interesting.
Yeah, like, put me in front of a PowerPoint and chat and I'll talk. And I'd much rather do that than write.
There we go. We'll get you to uni to do a guest lecture. I'm saying that on our podcast on the record. But yeah, I think what we're going to need to do as AI comes more into our classroom is really challenge. So what do teachers need? Like, we don't need knowledge. We can Google stuff. Like, you know, the amount of times my children just in the kitchen will ask, okay, Google, and ask it questions. Yeah. We don't need knowledge, contrary to what Michael Gove said, that it's all about knowing kings and queens. I totally do not think it's about that. It's about the human element. That's what we're going to need going forward, to be vulnerable, to embrace vulnerability, to support others, and equally to present. I think teachers are performers, and that's what we need more of, not people writing great essays and getting 100%, but people that can perform and storytell, yeah, and captivate and, you know, really ignite curiosity and creativity. That's what we need, right?
Oh, 100%. And I think that's the big thing, isn't it? It should just be about growing your confidence. It should just be about building that teacher persona that you have. Because, like, I would say one of the biggest gripes I had when I was at uni was, funny enough, with Dove and all them, because they'd only just got in, I think, in my last year. And we spent 3.5 years writing essays on the Rose Report. I don't know whether you remember it, but it was Labour's new thing. It was,
oh my God, the Rose curriculum is literally my favourite thing. I can't believe you're going to talk about the Rose curriculum.
Yeah, yeah, because we did like 3.5 years on it. And it was like all these things that Labour were going to bring in. And we spent, that's all we did our degree
on. Oh my God.
And then we got out, and I think the first interview I went to, they were like, oh, okay. And I was like, well, they were all about the Rose Review, the Rose curriculum, blah, blah. And they were like, oh, you do know, like, that's not coming into play.
Wow. Like, oh, I can't believe you weren't. Right, all my students listening will have seen me act out. I actually act out, Martin, when the Rose curriculum was created, and then how it got pulped in my imagination, like when Terminator goes into the lava at the end. I actually act it out for my students. I'm so excited we're talking about Rose curriculum right now. Wouldn't that have transformed the learning landscape?
Yeah, because I think it's exactly what you've just said then, isn't it? It's about learning how to find something rather than just knowing some knowledge.
Yeah, and it had one of the 6 key learning areas was well-being, wasn't it? Physical and mental health and well-being. Why is that still not a core part of our curriculum? It's baffling.
It's because it was getting brought in, wasn't it, by Labour? So when the Tories come in, they don't want to do something that the other side said was good. That's the crazy. Only reason they got rid of it. And they went back to the other stuff.
They went back to the 1988 curriculum, yeah, that they rehashed. That's crazy.
And it's mad stuff like that. And that's the thing I think is important. Like, definitely, I think that's where some of the flaws come in education. It is just building up learning with Harvard teachers, because you can't really do as much. You have to do what you're told to teach. Mm-hmm. But I think that's it. Like, if you had any advice for teachers right now, from the journey you've been on, from obviously your teaching career and then looking back at it and now university one, and obviously you're kind of dishing out the knowledge to the students now as well, what would be like the advice you'd give to anyone, whether they're a new teacher or have been in the game for a while?
Oh, okay. Some final thoughts for today, yeah. Some final words. Do you know what I would say? Because we've also spoken a bit about like the fact you have to do some stuff in teaching. Yeah. But I would say, just be yourself. Like, that's what you bring to the classroom, is you. And you are going to have certain stuff you have to do. But as we said at the start, you deliver it in your way. You can zhuzh it up. You can make it snazzy. And then just as you keep going through your teaching journey, what I did, what worked for me, was I kept questioning, is this still serving me? Like, am I still being the best teacher in this place? And that's why then I'd think, actually, no, I need a new challenge. I need a new school. And then actually, I need a new sector as I move to higher education. And each time, I felt like I was finding a classroom that was the best fit for me and where I could be myself. Like, I feel now I'm being my most authentic self. When I stand in front of my lecture theatre of 100 students, I feel at home. It feels good. So I think for anyone listening, there are many classrooms out there. There are many schools, many settings. Even then, further education at college or higher education at uni, like, find the place that feels like home.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to do it. Like, there is so many different schools out there, isn't there? There's so many different ways of doing it. even like, even if you're in a thinking of just primary, there is a vast difference, isn't there, between a 1-4 entry and a 4-4 entry.
Yeah.
And it's little things like that. And I think it is just finding the one. That's
well, so like you cool. did. Like you found the one and you stayed there for 9 years. Like that was the fit for you. You were happy.
Yeah. And I think what's important to understand with that is, like, don't get me wrong, it wasn't just potluck that I landed there. Like, I went to a school I didn't really like, which I know we'll touch on more in next week. But then I did the rest of the year of supply. And we're very picky about, like, schools I'd go back to and schools I'd want to... Because I was very aware then, after that first one, of, like, I'm not just taking any job. And then that's why I think when I was in one, I was like, do you know what? This is the one for me.
I love that. You knew that was home. I love that.
Yeah. Oh, no, class. But no, I think that was good. I think we'll wrap it up there. But I think that was really good, just to get an insight into that.
Yeah, thanks. I feel like this is therapy. I love talking to you. This is thanks everyone for listening. Thank you for listening to my rambling.
And I think it's good even just everyone hearing, like, about how to get into, like, lecturing and different things.
Yeah, contact me. If you're interested, contact me. Like, my top tip is you probably need a master's. But some unis want you to have a PhD or EdD, some don't. We're seeing more and more unis offer roles called, instead of being a lecturer, you'd be called a practitioner. And this means, you know, you could lecture, but you don't have a doctorate yet. You don't have PhD or EdD. And then many unis might actually fund you to do that in-house, because they probably expect you to do a PhD or an EdD. But yeah, look, just Google lecturing. Lecturer, practitioner or contact me. I'm more than happy for people if they're thinking about transitioning to higher education. If you've got a good few years of teaching under your belt, if you've got a master's or you're just finishing one, get in touch with me. Let's talk it out.
Oh, no class. I'm sure they all will. Where's the best place that they can find you then to do that?
Everywhere. I mean, come find me. You'll find me on Insta along with Martin. You'll find me Dr. Poppy Gibson, or find me on Twitter, Poppy Gibson UK. Find me on LinkedIn. Just reach out, however, and or just comment on any of Martin and mine's podcast posts. Yeah. I'll get in touch with you.
Oh, class. Well, we'll wrap up there. If you're ever looking to message me about anything as well, definitely Instagram's the best place, at the Teachers PT. But yeah, we'll leave it there for today. It's been
dead. And next week we're going to talk about you. Next week we're going to
reveal
the Martin Malone journey, the Martin Malone story.
Good stuff. Right. Well, we'll wrap it up there. And I'll speak to you again next week. Bye now, Poppy.
Bye.